Welcome to another episode of Ignite Agility. We are going to be talking with Heather Polivka about generational workforce issues. But before we dive in, don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. Heather, tell us a little bit about you and Awesome People Leaders.
Thanks. Heather Polivka, I'm the founder and CEO of Awesome People Leaders, and we are a neuroscience-based manager development experience. So we help to develop soft skills, inclusion, emotional intelligence, and healthy workplace behaviors. And we do that through a combination of high tech and high touch. So high tech that puts it in the learner's hands at wherever they are in the moment with 15-minute micro lessons, which is about all our brains can absorb, combined with 24/5 access to experienced coaches, where they get a response within one business day to role play a conversation, ask questions, you know, deal with the situation at work. So it is an exciting new and one of its kind manager development experience for frontline, first time, middle managers. And I would say anyone who leads people, whether they report to you or not, which I think definitely applies to this audience.
Absolutely. When you said people skills, soft skills, that speaks our language for Scrum Masters and people working in a team-based approach like Scrum.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And we do have quite a few Scrum Masters. I would also say like project managers are another one where you have to lead and influence without necessarily having the authority,
right?
And work with people coming at the work, maybe with different perspectives, backgrounds, and experiences. So the soft skills are critical.
So one of the things that appealed to us about having you in particular as a guest is that neuroscience, that, you know, all those things, those people things, and the biggest topic we're seeing is generational workforce issues. There are five generations in the workforce right now. I pulled SHRM's definition, Society for Human Resources Management, and they say it's not just Gen Z, millennials, Gen X, boomers, but what they call traditionalists. So all five being in the workforce today. So what are the top three things, the three issues you're advising your clients on right now regarding generational workforce considerations?
There's really three that get called out, you know, when I'm talking with leaders and they want to bring us in, they want to leverage Awesome People Leaders. One is definitely communication and communication styles. The second is working styles of those five generations. And last is relationship to authority. And that's probably the one that the executives struggle with the most. As we talk. So yeah, those would be the three.
let's dive in on communication a little bit. I think of my 11-year-old son relating to me, and the meme that comes to mind is the one that says, "I was always prepared to stop being mommy and to be called mom," right? I was always, you know, prepared to stop being called mama and being called mom, but nobody prepared me for bruh. It's like, well, bruh. And I'm like, I am mom, you know? Yeah. So even just some of the slang. So from a communication standpoint, what can you share with us about that communication piece being problematic or being a challenge in the workforce?
Yeah. I'm going to start a little bit bigger picture and then dive in. One of the things that's really important for us in the workplaces, and this is what I work with organizations on, is understanding the context that shapes each generation. And so there is a distinct, you know, boomers, when they were coming up, the primary usage was the phone. I mean, the phone was kind of everything, right?
Going like this, right?
Going like this. You do, for those of you who can't see, we're doing a little like, you know, the telephone thing by your head. And then for Xers, we also were phone, but we adopted email. We were technology adopters. And we also were the first latchkey kids and all of that, which shaped a lot of how we work, which we'll touch on in a second, that we're sort of a divide and conquer, because we kind of had to do that as latchkey kids. Then you have the next generation millennials. Their primary thing was the phone. They know, meaning not the phone is in a telephone, but a phone is in like an iPhone. they were technology natives. And so their default is really like text messaging is the most comfortable way of communicating, and also direct messaging, whether that's, you know, Facebook or, you know, any kind of chat. And then you have Gen Z that they want a bit more connection. So FaceTiming is a big thing. And, you know, video, little videos are a big thing, but that's as, you know, personal and interrelational as it gets. So what I see happen is literally, since most of your leadership is going to be Boomer X, they just assume like everyone comes in and knows how to make a phone call. And oh, when you've got a problem, you pick up the phone. So we have this default way that we've always communicated, and we assume that everybody else knows that. And then the millennial and Gen Z come in, and guess what? They've never had to do calling or salutations in emails, or they're used to a short form kind of communication method. So then you have this struggle between the older two generations of why don't you know this, and the younger generation going, well, that's just not how we communicate. So part of it is, if we can create understanding, it's not that anyone's bad or wrong, but it is about understanding the context that shapes each generation, and how do we all flex into one another. So it might be totally fine that, and by the way, leaders listening, that means you do have to get on that Slack channel. You do have to participate, right? Lean in. And then also for millennials and Gen Z, we say, who are you talking to? Meet people where they are. And so if your client, if your work partner is their default communication style is an email or phone, then you use the mechanism to meet people where they're at. And if we all flex into one another, it actually creates a really beautiful, beautiful environment. But at the same time, we have to establish rules within our teams, like foundational rules going, when do we use which communication tool for what? And everyone abides by those rules.
We may even call those working agreements. We like to call them in the Agile community or the Scrum community, rules of engagement.
Yes, absolutely. And see, most teams, and certainly not, you know, in this audience, but I would say most teams in general totally skip over those working agreements.
Yeah.
They dive right into doing the work, and then they wonder why they have communication problems. Oh, this person chatted, but that person picked up the phone, and it's like two ships crossing in the night, because we haven't established those working agreements. Or what I've seen is, we establish them and people don't follow them.
Right.
And by the people not following them, most people assume I'm meaning the millennial and Gen Z. But I will tell you, I see very often it's the executive team who's not using the Slack channel for the more casual day-to-day conversation. So they actually are leaving a shadow that says, we don't have to follow the rules. So if they don't have to, why should anyone? Mm-hmm. So those working agreements are important, one, to establish, and two, that everyone engages according to the rules.
Everyone, including myself. And I'm a Gen Xer, just to be really transparent about that. You know, and you mentioned email kind of being our currency or our mode of communication. There's another Gen Xer I interact with frequently who, you know, thankfully is my bookkeeper. So somebody who tracks a lot of those things, but the email novels. And I've had to say, I have a 3 email rule. That is my tolerance. That is my limit, even though I love that mode of communication. So after 3 rounds of email, we will be getting on a phone call because I can't deal.
And that's actually one of those foundational agreements I encourage teams to make in general. Because we assume other people know that after 3 emails, this probably means this is a conversation.
Yeah, right? It's like, I can't even scroll through all that stuff.
Yeah. But I laugh, you know, like when I do online shopping, I'm also an Xer, to be transparent. I will use the online chat, anything to avoid actually talking to somebody, you know, like the calling in, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, let's move on. I think that gave a lot of awesome tips for communication. Let's move on to the next one. And I think that's work style. We talked about work style being kind of a potential issue with so many generations in the workforce.
And part of, I mean, we're seeing that play out when you talk about return to office.
Oh, right? Yes.
That is a work style. There are some that are much more comfortable using technology as their primary interface, or they don't see it as a hurdle. And I would say that's primarily millennial and Gen Z. But they also like the personal connection, but they want personal connection for a purpose. What millennials and Gen Z, it's like, don't make me come into the office to sit on my computer and do Zoom meetings, right?
Yep.
And then you have Boomer and Xers who I always say, like, we kind of grew up, and if someone wasn't yelling at us, then we knew we were doing okay, right? There wasn't mm-hmm. the positive reinforcing feedback. There wasn't the level of recognition. And so, and they want to see people. Like,
yep.
I need to see people to know what they're doing.
Exactly.
Kind of an old school style of leadership and management, right?
Totally, totally is. I think of some of the women's groups, and that you and I both belong to a number of women supporting women type groups, Team Women, NABO of Minnesota. And I am not speaking about those two groups. I am going to let the group I'm going to out save face. I'm not going to name them. But on the heels of the pandemic, we were meeting on Zoom, and so many people wouldn't turn their camera on. And they fall into that boomer traditionalist genre or generation. And the hot topic was exactly what you just said. Can't see them, so they're not working. They better be, you know, clocking in and da, 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 da. And all, it was just such a downer to even be on that conversation. So I tend to be a rabble rouser. So I said, it sounds to me like you don't trust any of these people. And one of the women said, and I kid you not, of course I don't trust them. And I said, why did they work for you? Yeah. I mean, this isn't even a going into the office versus remote conversation anymore. This is a, why do they work for you if you don't trust them?
Yeah. So you're right. Absolutely. And those employees feel that. I mean, there's no way they don't feel that lack of trust. And so, it's a number of things. It's how do we manage by outcomes instead of, can I see what they're doing? Right. We can still be productive.
Sure.
But it's about achieving outcomes versus how many hours did they sit at their desk and I can see them. It's also that I think boomers and Xers, it is a, 8-to-5 job, and most of us probably eat lunch at our desk, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a lot of Xers right now, we always wanted the greater flexibility. We always wanted that, but we didn't have the numbers. We're the smallest generation of all of them. So we didn't have the numbers to be a catalyst for change in our workforces. And Xers right now are sandwiched between elderly parents that they're caring for and still having college kids at home. So Xers more than anyone need the flexibility as a generation. And you have millennials and Gen Z who are like, yeah, it doesn't have to be 8 to 5. It's about getting the job done. And I might get that job done, 7 to 3 or 7 to noon. And then again, from 3 to 9, like whatever those hours are, it's a more fluid for those generations than it has been for boomers and Xers. So again, it's about having the conversations. Are we leading to outcomes? What is okay? Are there times that we do need everyone to be, online or together to collaborate for a business purpose? Like, it's better when we're all working at the same time, whether that's remote or not, or the same location at the same time. And what's the reason? Is that because it produces a better business outcome? And where can we flex to allow people to work their best? I have a girlfriend. She is not a morning person. That's one of her requirements, is she does not start work before 10 a.m., but she works later, right?
Right.
Another girlfriend, she is at her desk, whether it's in the office or at home, at 6 a.m. because she is a morning person. why don't we let people do a bit more according to their rhythms, their life, and what their life calls for, as long as they're getting things done. But it doesn't mean it's a free for all. And I'm going to come back to your agreements. Mm-hmm. It's about having those conversations and all of us looking at, are we trying to control people because we don't trust them? Right. Or are we trying to run a business and there's certain outcomes we need to achieve and we make very clear what those outcomes are and we manage people to those outcomes and we sort of trust them, I don't know, as adults to be able to achieve the outcomes accordingly.
And if treat people like adults, they'll act like adults.
Exactly. And if they don't, you know, achieve that, then we also treat them like adults with repercussions. There you go.
Absolutely. The outcome speaks our language in the Agile and Scrum community because we are talking about trusting a team of people, a self-managing, self-organizing group of people, and we want to see the outcome. We want to see something of value produced every time box that we happen to call a sprint. So focusing on the outcomes as opposed to busyness is what I'm hearing you say. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. And again, it's about having those conversations and all of us willing to look at our own paradigms and go, does that make sense? I mean, just because I came up and had to sit at a desk Monday through Friday, you know, 8 to 5, I know there were times I was phoning it in and I was just sitting there waiting for the 5 o'clock and not really doing anything productive. Like, you know, am I willing to sort of know, say that no one else has to go through that hazing exercise, so to speak. But also when it comes to reward and recognition and feedback, I think that millennials and Gen Z need positive reinforcing feedback on a much more regular basis and recognition than what boomers and Xers came up in their careers and are adept and skilled at providing. And so that's another place of learning and flexing into one another. It's sort of for us to learn that we get a lot more with a lot of carrots than, you know, than the vinegar maybe that a lot of us grew up with in our careers.
Yeah, I did not experience positive reinforcement. It was always negative reinforcement. Well, those are awesome tips regarding work style, and we definitely need to demonstrate some versatility there. The last one, near and dear to my heart, because I just had a student this week, and I was thinking about this upcoming conversation with you and I about relationship to authority. And she is in her early to mid 20s. And one of the things she's struggling with is she has a demographic, and I'm going to just use her words. Her words were older white gentlemen that are all the authority figures where she works. And they're sending her to all this wonderful training that you provide and that I provide. And then she's met with, well, this is the way we've always done it. Well, this is the way we do things at this organization. And she says, I'll even show them the materials from the training class that they paid for. And a few of them will go, well, maybe we should look at that, but I'm going to tell you, you know, the way it is. And she is just struggling. Yeah. So that talk a little bit about those relationships to authority from either perspective, the perspective that I just shared from a 20 something year old versus, you know, somebody from a person that is that authority figure in an organization.
Yeah. And I will say this, I have a lot of compassion for each and every generation. Okay. I'm not pro or anti any generation. I do think it's about understanding where we're all coming from and flexing into one another. So boomers and Xers, when we came up through our careers, it was very top down. Like what we say goes. You know, there was a formula to follow. You worked and you toiled to make your way up the ladder. It wasn't by, you didn't do it by questioning authority. You really, that is not how you advanced in your career. And so if that's what we knew, then we sort of expect when we get to those higher levels, well, we know better. We're experienced. We've paid our dues. We've seen a lot of scenarios, rightfully so. So it's sort of like what we say goes. Right? Because that's what we came up with. The difference is that the pace of change in our workplaces and the world has changed more during the millennial and Gen Z's lifetime than it changed during the boomer and Z's lifetime or X's lifetime. Okay. So there's a lot that, I mean, if you think about it, boomers can remember before there was the internet.
Oh, X for sure.
Can remember before there was the internet. We can remember like when you were faxing documents, when we hand wrote things, we didn't have computer programs and that sort of thing. So the other thing I know I learned as an Xer was you don't ask a lot of questions. Questions were seemed like they were challenging authority. And so, yeah, I see you nodding.
For sure. Yep. I see that reaction all the time.
All the time. And so then we have millennials and Gen Z, and understand, because they're like digital natives, they didn't have anyone to teach them how to use the iPhone. They figured it out and they taught us Xers. Zs have learned a ton of how to do stuff. They teach themselves, oh, what's this new application? I'm going to teach myself how to do it. I'm going to watch TikTok videos. I'm going to, you know, chat with my friends. I'm going to teach myself. And there's a certain element of that when they have explored and learned and taught themselves. And that means also sometimes run up against things, things haven't worked and they haven't failed, but that's their learning style. It's not just, believe me, that doesn't work. They have to experiment and discover it for themselves. And they're used to sort of learning for themselves and doing a lot of inquiry. So I see this all the time where Zs and millennials are asking a lot of questions, and the Xers and boomers are responding with a lot of defensiveness because mm-hmm. they think their authority is being challenged, versus no, we have two very inquisitive generations that need to learn for themselves and learn by doing and learn by trying. And so they're actually asking questions. They're not questioning authority. That's not the intent behind it. But they're used to exploring and finding a way to have things work. And so having that understanding can like bring down some of the defensiveness mm-hmm. of Xers and boomers. But then it's also saying to millennials and Gen Z, understanding the generational context that exists for Xers and for boomers, and saying, you know, you can preface it. You can say, you know, I'm exploring this thing. And so I'm sure these are things you've already thought of and explored. So I'm not challenging and I'm trying to learn. Just putting that little thing
phrase
before you. Yeah. That little thing before you pepper 10 questions makes a world of difference.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's one of those things. And the reality is that the pace at which millennials and Zs have learned new things and applied new things is not the pace that we've grown up typically in business. I wish that weren't the case, but that's not the case. So there's also a certain amount of things are not going to move as fast as you would like them to. But can you bring your leadership along? Can you find a small experiment? Like in this case, with the executive team, instead of bringing like 10 ideas, if these are all the things they're teaching in the course and we should change all these things, identify one that would be your safest experiment. And go to your leadership and say, hey, I have a little experiment I'd like to try. See, experiment is non-threatening. You know?
It's a great word. It's a great word. And we love that word in the Agile community.
Yeah. So that's it's about approach. It's about flexing. It's about influencing. So this is where all these soft skills come in. But it's also about understanding that people aren't challenging authority by asking questions, and understanding that providing context for your questions also will lower the defensiveness of anyone who may experience it as challenging your authority.
Well, I appreciate all the advice and tips you've peppered in along the way as we've talked about communication challenges, work style differences, relationship to authority in this generational workforce. If we had to put a bow on this, is there anything else you wanted to share from your expertise with our listeners before we wrap it up?
I'm going to bring it back for your listeners, but it's also something I hammer home, shall we say, when I'm working with teams. And that is, you call it agreements. I call it sort of the foundational team rules. It is so imperative that we use that tool when we first start working with one another. And it goes beyond even the things that we've talked about today. It's what are people's strengths? Where can we lean into them? Where might they have skills we may not have known that don't fit in the box of their job description, but that could be good to understand as a team? What are the structures people need to work most effectively? What are our rules for navigating conflict? Because wherever there are people, there will be conflict. And too often we don't establish those agreements. And then we wonder why so-and-so did such a thing and la, la, la. But if we have ground rules or agreements to that matter, then that helps to navigate through the inevitable so much more effectively. And that is something that we work very strongly with people on. And the last thing I'll say is a lot of this is about human beings interacting with human beings. You know, we talked about the defensiveness if someone's asking me a question, so I perceive it as challenging authority or adding the various contexts so it's not a trigger. That's where brain science comes in. It's the first thing we start with our program is understanding how our own brains act and react and how that gives us our thoughts and our behaviors, but also then having that same understanding for our fellow human beings. As we relate to each other more and more as human beings and understand our humanity, it creates a lot of space for us to become stronger together.
Awesome. Where can people learn more about you and Awesome People Leaders?
Well, they can learn more about Awesome People Leaders at awesomepeopleleaders.com, and they can learn more about me. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn, Heather Polifka, P-O-L-I-V as in Victor, K-A. I'd love to hear from you, listeners.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.